and thin and young and lovely. The girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and today we're going to speak with the mayor of the city of Kenosha, John Antaramian. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I want to note, first of all, that we're recording this on April 7th, so if news events overtake us, our listeners will know why. Mr. Mayor, you've been on the job now for about a full year since your re-election after an absence from the office. How do you see the state of the city at this point?
Well, I think the city is in fairly good shape. Financially, we've done the things we need to do to maintain ourselves and to look at the future and where we're going to go. I think that we've been working very hard as to the issues dealing with the border agreements, a number of issues that we had to deal with, the Velodrome and the Dream Playground. We've been able to work those through, get them done, and move forward from there. Right now, what we're doing is spending a lot of time on infrastructure, looking at how we're going to do the roads, what kind of funding is still out and available to do the infrastructure. And when I talk infrastructure, many people always just think of roads. It's not just roads. It's
what else?
Well, the whole lakefront. If you look at the lakefront, you've got all the revetment walls. Many of them are failing. The city over the next number of years are going to have to take a look at how we're going to redo those revetment walls. So we've made requests to the federal government already. We've made requests to the federal government on the harbor to try to get that fixed. So there are a number of areas of when you look at infrastructure, it's those type of things. You've got the two beach houses that are in need of financing and repair. All that is part of the infrastructure of the city. So it's not just roads. It's all these other things when you look at infrastructure.
What about the pipes that are underneath all those old streets, Mr.
Well, that's,
Mayor?
That's one of the big issues that I've been pushing on along with the number of aldermen in the water utility since I've been elected. It's an issue that needs to be addressed, and I'm feeling fairly good about it at the moment. It looks like we're going to be able to get some legislation passed through the state, which will enable us actually to deal with the lead pipes. Because what we want to do is, as we replace or rebuild roads, that we deal with the lead pipes at the same time. It's a much more cost-effective way of doing it, number one. And number two, we then know that whole sections are being taken care of, and we're not sure, you know, it's not like I'm doing one here, it's a scattered approach is not going to work. So this way what we will be doing is when we do a rebuild, we'll be doing the pipes at the time.
How serious of a lead water pipe problem do we have, both with respect to the delivery pipes under the streets and also those laterals that connect one's house?
Well, from the delivery pipes, there's none. There are no lead pipes from the delivery side of things. The city banned the use of lead pipes back in 1938, and it went into effect in 1940. So we're one of those that don't have that same problem. So, you know, we're in better shape than most cities when it comes to that. But we have lead pipes from the laterals, from the house to the street. And the reason that's a concern is it's not a concern right now if someone has a lead lateral. Right now what we do is we put phosphates in the water. And the phosphates attach to the lead and coat it, and so that lead does not flow into the house.
So it really makes it inert for practical purposes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you don't have lead going to the house. The problem is when we rebuild the street, or not, we rebuild the street and redo our pipelines underground, it shakes the phosphate off, and now I have lead going back in the homes. And that's what we're trying to eliminate. So the goal is elimination of the lead to the homes. It's just a good health decision. And who knows, sometimes you may end up with situations that occur that could create other problems. But it's just one of those things. It needs to be dealt with. It needs to be taken care of. And what we're doing is putting a rational plan that is not going to be excessive in cost together to get it done in a rational way.
Well, how do you suppose that we're going to fare with respect to state and federal help on this particular issue with respect to paying for all of that?
Well,
the lakefront, the rocks, the shoreline,
With the lead pipe, the state isn't going to pay for that. That's not going to happen. What the legislation does is allows the water utility to actually do the work and get it done. With right now, we can't do that. So this will be the water utility moving forward, making this done, and doing it in a way that it's a very inexpensive cost to everyone. And so that's what the legislation will do. But we have to wait for the legislation to pass.
So you need the legislation to allow, in essence, home rule for this?
In a sense, I have to have the legislation to allow me to put together the funding sources that need to be put together to enable us to do the work.
Let's move on to another big infrastructure-related project, since you've brought up infrastructure, Mayor John. The Chrysler, the vast Chrysler expanse. I drive by there. I see lots of action going on some days. What's the status of that, and what do you forecast it's going to be happening for the rest of this year, at least?
Oh, the rest of this year, you're going to keep on seeing them doing what they're doing, basically digging out hot spots, removing concrete, grinding the concrete. Those are the main things you'll see continually happening this year. Next year, we'll probably finish up that aspect of what's going on and then also start to treat the site in certain areas with, they call them bugs, but basically enzymes that they pump into the ground to help alleviate the oil that's too deep for us to really get at.
It's sort of a natural some areas, solution, isn't
right.
it?
So we're at a situation where you have to go down 20 feet. You can't dig up 20 feet, 11 acres of 20 feet to get at something. So what we do is we have pumps going on at all times to maintain the material on the site. And then what we'll do is we'll start doing the treatment next year with the enzymes.
And it's essential to keep people off the site at this point, isn't it?
Well, no. Right now the site's being dug up, so we're not going to have anyone on the site. Next year we'll probably have pulled the fences in a little more. More of the properties will be cleaned and ready to go. The last piece of it will be about 11 or 12 acres that are going to be the most difficult piece to deal with.
As you progress through this project, you see some of that being seeded and turned into public space in an interim basis until something else happens?
No. It'll probably be just left as grass. It won't be fenced in, but it'll be open once we have everything cleaned up and that there's no health hazard to the community. We have a group that is going to be getting together shortly dealing with how to redevelop the site, looking at research type of facility and other things like that, and trying to define how we're going to do certain things on that site.
Now, the city doesn't own the old Bonnie Haim property where we used to park cars and trucks in the old days. Is there a possibility that parcel and the Chrysler parcel could somehow be a part of a comprehensive redevelopment plan for that part of the city?
It will be at some point in time. That site is owned privately, though. It's not owned by the city. And so, again, what we would probably be looking at is how does all this tie in together to create a development that's going to be a major focal point for the city?
And that would imply that we'd be addressing some traffic issues on 60th Street and 52nd Street, I'll bet. Mayor Antaramian, how will we handle that?
Well, the 52nd Street is a state trunk highway. And so the state is the responsible entity to redevelop and redo 52nd Street. The city has, over the years, continually purchased land on 52nd Street in preparation that someday something will happen. Now, whether that's going to happen 5 years, 10 years, 2 years, no one knows right now with the state, because the state has a huge transportation budget problem. They've got about a $6 or $7 billion shortfall in their budget in transportation. And so timing is going to be like everything else. We just don't know right now on how that that's going to impact. 60th Street is a street that the city has. And between 60th and 30th and 30th Avenue, you know, we'll probably be looking at some turn lanes and other types of things over time. But those aren't things that have to be done right away.
Well, we're still fighting like crazy over finishing I-94 expansion between the state line and the Racine northern border. What's your opinion as to the outlook for that, and how important is that for Kenosha?
For the city, for Kenosha, it's not as important. For Racine, I think it's a great deal more important, Racine County, because most of the work in Kenosha County has been done. So it's basically all Racine County that's left. And I think that the problem is more in the sense that the legislators in Racine County are upset because they were promised that they were going to get this done this year, and now it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So I think they're concerned about, if it doesn't happen this year, when does it happen? So you may see an attempt by them to borrow more money to get this project done, which will be interesting to see if they're able to pull that off. I mean, right now the transportation fund has borrowed more than they should, but this is one of those issues that I think is a very hot issue for the Racine legislatures, and they need to deal with it.
It's going to be interesting in Madison on the transportation issue this year, I think.
Yes, it
seems like it's coming to a head. Is that your impression?
I think so. I mean, I in this business, I always chuckle when it comes to the state. You don't know what they're going to do. And so I guess I'm not going to second guess. I think, though, that you have a number of legislators up there who are very committed to trying to get some things done with the interstate. And so I think they're going to fight very hard for that. But again, I don't know what the outcome truly will be.
Mayor Antaramian, you've often spoken very forcefully for the need for intergovernmental cooperation with our neighbors. I wonder if you'd speak a little bit about that. First of all, what comes to mind because of what's in the news right now, we are going to have a new mayor in Racine. Mayor in Waukegan is going to be a new mayor in Waukegan. Mike Polakoff is resigning after a wonderfully long tenure as village administrator of Pleasant Prairie. It's a whole new cast of characters. How do you think that's going to affect us and you here in Kenosha?
Well, I don't think it affects us dramatically, but I think it's something on a long-term basis that we need to start working together on. You know, when people talk about crime or they talk about the economy and everything else, we're not just a entity unto ourselves. We're a regional area. The communities between Chicago and Milwaukee are basically a huge powerhouse of resources and region, and we don't take advantage of that enough. So part of what we're going to be looking at doing, though, this is a long process. It's not going to happen because you have a lot of new people now, is actually starting to create those relationships and start looking at how we can do some things together in small ways, more than likely basically dealing law enforcement first, because I think that's an area that everyone has a concern on and we need to be proactive on.
What are the issues in law enforcement where that coordination is essential, do you think?
Well, when you look at the different communities, Kenosha has been very fortunate, and I shouldn't say just fortunate. We've done a lot of things right. And I know that people are always concerned about crime and that, you know, one crime is one crime too many. But when you look at our surrounding area, we need to make sure that we understand what's going on in Waukegan, in Racine, and work together to make sure that not only do we do the things that benefit the city of Kenosha and Kenosha County, but that those communities are involved with us in how we're dealing with crime and that the coordination is good. And that doesn't mean to say that's not good right now. It's just that as things change and turn, we need to work, I believe, more in those areas.
I gather that means you're going to be reaching out to your new colleagues in these other administrations and starting to form some relationships.
Yes, I will.
Let's talk to some relationships a little closer to home, Mayor John. There have been some discussions over the years, pretty heated ones, about what happens on the west side of I-94 and the northern part of Kenosha County. What's the status of those intergovernmental agreements? What do you foresee for the future in that corridor?
Well, I'm fairly optimistic that the local units of governments have come to a agreement that is still has a little tweaking to do, but I'm confident that things are going to happen and that we're going to move forward and get an agreement done. And that eliminates, and that goes back to, again, some of our discussions earlier about making sure that people are getting along and that local governments are working together. So is it a perfect agreement from the city's perspective? No. And I'm sure that if you talk to the town of Summers or Village of Summers and the town of Paris, they'll say the same thing. Is it perfect? No, but nothing's ever perfect. But it is an agreement that all of us can live with and all of us can prosper under. So I think that I feel very good about the agreement, and I think that the other my neighbors all feel good about it also.
And what will that prosperity look like?
Well, I think long term, from the city's perspective, the majority of the land that would eventually come into the city will be used as industrial. That will be the future industrial base for the city. And part of what I'm looking to do with the industrial base is manufacturing. We're looking at research and development, and we're looking at technology. Those are the three areas that we're focusing on for the city. So I'm not looking to have huge amounts of growth fast. What I'm looking at is steady growth that's going to fill in the types of jobs that we need to start creating here. We need jobs that are at livable wages so that people can stay in the community. We need to keep our what we'll call the brain drain, all these young people, very bright, very, very positive in what they can do, who leave our area, and how do we get jobs to make sure that they stay here. Those type of things are the things that we're looking to do. So I'm not looking at the growth in the sense of, oh, geez, we're going to just boom and run rampant. I want to make sure we're more selective on what we're bringing in and how we bring it in.
And there are concomitants to that growth, aren't there, Mr. Mayor? Just in the news recently, there was a fire at one of the newer businesses in one of our business parks, and the fire department expressed concern about being prepared and that those employees being prepared to cope with fires. And it occurs to me that as we get more structures, larger structures, taller structures, that our fire protection and our police protection could prove inadequate. Do you foresee problems, and how will the city cope with those?
Well, the city literally basically looks at police and fire as mainstays of what we do. So the situation there is that we work with the police and the fire department, the chiefs, as to what they believe their future needs are, and then we put together a plan on how we're going to get there. And so that's what we are doing. I'm not as concerned right now in the sense of, as you made the comment of someone saying that they're concerned about police and fire, I'm not as concerned in the sense of the process we have in place. Now, we are rebuilding a new station. That'll change some of the operations that we have. The bigger concern, from my perspective, is paramedic services. That is the biggest issue. When we build new buildings, you have a lot of fire systems in place. There's a lot of things that are done in that sense of protection for individuals. Paramedic service is the one that I think is the biggest, and we're just literally adding another paramedic squad to the city. So I think that's the aspect that I'm the most concerned about and the area where we're addressing first. As far as the law enforcement goes, as cities grow, you need to add more police. And so we have a plan on how we're going to do that and doing it in a rational way that allows us to do it, because the state limits what we can do. You can't just add 5 new police officers if you want to. You know, financially, that doesn't work. The state limits the expenditures that a community can make and therefore limits how many people you can bring on at any one time. That's why it's so important for us to look at things and do it in a rational way as to what's the plan, where are we going, and what do we need to add when we need to add it.
Are those state laws far too restrictive in your judgment?
I think they're very restrictive when it comes to law enforcement and protective services. I think they take away local control, and I think that's a problem. But it's not a fight I'm going to win in the legislature. So I'll target my fight more towards you need to do something to relieve the pressure on police and fire that we were able to at least add positions and exclude those positions. Because I think I can very easily go to the public and say this cost is for adding couple police officers and a couple firefighters, because we're going to need those as we continue to grow, and that I think you can actually work and make happen, but we have to get the legislature to allow us to do that.
I see. Well, there's a lot of development, economic development issues that face you as mayor, Mayor Antaramian. What about some of the other ones that are so much in the news and on the back burner too? And that's the Uptown neighborhood. We have the Business Improvement District downtown, which is going through yet another new executive director. I, frankly, as a professional, I don't know how an organization can achieve its best potential when it has a new director every 12 months or so. But that's just my professional comment. I'm concerned about that. I wonder if you're concerned, too.
Well, you have organizations that make these determinations. The city does not determine the downtown bid districts, boards, or anything else. I shouldn't say boards, but their executive director, as they wish to hire. So I have to have faith that the people there have figured out what they want and what they need, and that they've hired a new person. We're going to see how that young person does, and we'll work with her and move forward with it and see how this progresses. As far as the uptown goes, uptown and downtown have a lot of things going on. You have the potential now of the Heritage House being redone, and we'll know within a couple of months exactly how that's going to work out.
Let's stop there for a minute. I've been on the edge of my seat waiting for the Heritage House for some time now. I'm not sure I will live long enough to see that happen. We are constantly getting, every few months, we get a story that there's a glimmer of hope in this financing or that financing. Is this last press release any more solid than any of the others?
I believe that this is very solid. Having said that, like anything else, whenever you're dealing with multiple sources of funding from multiple entities, until everyone signs on the dotted line, everything gets done, and they actually are starting to move dirt, that's when you know that it's done. So do I think it's going to happen? Yes. Am I going to sit here and say absolutely, positively, 100%? I mean, no one can do that at this point in time. But I do believe that they're in the position now that better than they've been in the past, and actually believe that they will be able to get this accomplished. If not, one part of this whole deal comes down to is that if it does not work this time, by the end of the year, the building probably, I not tell you probably, the building will come down, because it's now getting to a point of where it's almost going to be unable to maintain through another winter.
Well, I remember the splendor of that ballroom well. I'm old enough to know that. And it's hard for me to imagine anyone putting enough money into the building to bring that fully back. But I would love to see it happen.
Well, there's hope that it will happen, and I'm feeling much better about that. But, again, it's one of those things that needs to get done. The KYF is also at that point where it needs a decision needs to be made before the end of the year as to what's going to happen there. So
what's the status of the KYF now, KYF downtown,
right,
by Library Park we're talking?
The status right now is that you have an owner who is attempting to redo it for housing, and I think he's fairly close to getting his financing in order. But again, it's not quite there, and we'll have to wait and see for sure. But I think there's another building that is slowly reaching a point where I think it has a little more time than the Heritage House does, but it's one of those things that we really do need to find someone who's going to do something with it so we don't lose it.
They both are and were wonderful buildings, and it's nice to preserve that old architecture. When we travel, we like to go to places where they have it. And so tearing it down always, I want to ask myself, what's the value of tearing it down versus the value of keeping it? And that's a tough decision for the city to make.
Well, it really doesn't come down to the city to make that decision. It comes down to, can the building... When does the building become dangerous? When does the building become so unable to be rehabbed that it's, cost-wise, you can't do anything? Because the city isn't going to be able to go into those buildings and fix them up. That's not going to happen. So the private sector has to do that. And the city has tried to be helpful on both buildings, leveraging finances to help them. But it still comes down to, in the end, it's the owner needs to be able to put all the other financing together to make it work.
Since we're talking about magnificent old buildings, let's bring up the Kenosha Theater. I'm always going to the Genesee and the Pabst and the Riverside. In my semi-retirement, I get to do a lot of things I didn't get to do before, and I fantasize about going to the Kenosha Theater and seeing those same shows. How big of a fantasy world am I living in, Mayor Antaramian?
I think that is a difficult project. And the owner of the property has done everything he can to maintain it so that it is not falling apart. So the roofs and those type of things, he's done a good job in maintaining. It's a tough project. It's just it's a very, very tough project because of the size and the cost of revamping that facility. So the good news is the structural part of the building has been maintained, and that's good. it's going to be, though, I think a long haul for him to be able to put together the financing he needs. Doesn't mean it can't happen. It's just not something that's going to happen tomorrow.
Do you think that the Genesee, for example, is a model for what could happen in Kenosha?
Actually, no. First off, if you do the exact same thing as doing from the Genesee, what you're doing is you're probably making it so that neither one succeed. You have to be a little different in what you do. So you have to figure out how you're going to market what you're doing versus what they're doing. Secondly, the Genesee financially has not done well. It's only survived because of a patron who came in and has funded a good percentage of the theater to make sure that it survived. So an economic model, at least the economic model they're using right now, has not worked.
And it seemed like it took Michael Cudahy in Milwaukee to get things going with those that theater up there.
Yes. You need to have someone, the reality is someone who has a very deep pocket that can get this off the ground.
The city has made a lot of progress in our lifetimes, Mayor Antaramian. It's wonderful to see. Educational progress of our community with respect to our schools, public schools, and our post-secondary education is really remarkable. Where do you see Kenosha positioning itself in the future as we describe ourselves to future businesses, to current businesses in terms of our plans, people who might want to move here? What kind of a community do you see Kenosha evolving into?
Well, I think, as I've said before, Kenosha is a diamond in the rough, and I think it's going to be something that has already polished dramatically, but we're going to get better. The educational aspect of this is part of that and very, very important. As a member of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, one of the things that we used to always talk about is municipalities can only become as good as the educational system in it. So from our perspective, I think that becomes a imperative as to having a good quality educational system. And I had two children who went through the system, and both have excelled because of the system. So I think that we're in a good position when it comes to companies coming in, that we're moving in the right direction. The educational system, I think, is very positive and moving forward. I think our educators have done an excellent job. When you go through the schools, you'll find the schools are in excellent shape. And there's a lot of good things happening. So I think that that's a positive when we sell our community to the business community. So I think we're in good shape in that sense. We can do, like everything, we can always do better. But I think we do a very good job.
Two items that have been in the news are, and are persistently in the news, are bus service and our street reconstruction and surfacing schedule. You might bring us up to date on expanded bus service in our community, what the thinking is on that?
Oh, we've already done it.
Mm-hmm.
We shifted a grant, and because of the grant change, we were able to implement an expansion of the transit system later into the evening and to some new locations. Now, some of the routes have done very, very well. Some of the routes haven't done so well. So what we'll do is, at 6 months, we'll do an analysis as to, okay, which ones have worked well, what ones aren't working, and what modifications do we need to make. So as far as the transit, we're trying to focus getting people to work. So getting people from the downtown area or from uptown or wherever, they're in the south side, north side, doesn't matter, getting them to where the industrial jobs are. And so that was one of the things that we have done.
What about the street reconstruction? So what should we expect in the next couple of months?
A lot of work. there's a lot of street reconstruction going on. We had hoped to move on 22nd Avenue this year, but I might have to hold off 1 year because the state has been slow on – I shouldn't say state slow. The legislature works at its own pace, and they are moving this lead pipe bill. But we want to get the lead pipe bill passed so that we can do the infrastructure with the lead pipes before we start rebuilding roads on the road. So timing-wise, it may not mesh, and so we may have to hold off an extra year on one of our projects. But once we get this lead pipe thing going, we're going to start moving on 22nd Avenue and getting that rebuilt basically from the south side all the way to the north side.
Any major traffic tie-ups in the next couple of months that we should be thinking about avoiding, John?
wherever we're doing construction, there's going to be tie-ups. So no one specific spot. We try to make sure we don't tie up all the same places at one time. We try to make sure we spread it around so that you're not don't have a total quagmire in any one spot.
I've noticed, at least I think I've noticed, that the traffic on Washington Road, more on the west side toward Amazon, is gotten a little bit better now, and the traffic signals seem to be timed a little better.
Right.
You have any comment on how that's going?
Well, I think that those are always things that the city and the county work together on to make sure that we try to get things so that speed and movement of traffic is maintained in a rational way. So that's a perfect example of just everyone trying to make sure that we get things done in the right way.
Now, as you know, of course, the human services issue of homeless is once again on the front burner because we have this annual license renewal of the refuge license of the organization known as First Step, which has been offering services to the really most difficult to serve of the homeless population. What is the outlook? Now, I know the city isn't responsible for funding a human services budget. Nonetheless, if First Step's license is denied and, in essence, the city breaks it, what is happening then to address the needs of this population, or do we just send them all to Dave Begala's neighborhood or somebody else's, which is where I live?
No, I think that, first off, I think there's some misunderstanding on how all this has come about. About 9 months ago, I made a request to a number of professionals, different organizations that deal with this group of individuals, and asked them to work on trying to resolve the issues at First Step.
And this was a very high-powered group of people who are professionals in the area. And it included people from First Step, too, as I recall.
Right, it included a whole group of people. And as a group, they met to try to resolve some of the neighborhood problems. And when you're a neighbor and you have certain rights also, and I think sometimes people forget this, that, you know, if you're a neighbor to a facility like this, you expect the facility to run with rules. The facility probably does not run with rules as well as they should. And so what we tried to do was to sit down and have people who knew the business, not people like me. That's not my area
of
expertise. I'm not going to pretend. But I asked a number of people who this is their area of expertise to sit down and try to work with First Step to resolve the problem. This is almost 9 months ago, so this isn't something that just happened yesterday, because we were having difficulties and we knew we were having difficulties. First Step made a decision that they were going to continue going the route that they were going. They didn't like the idea of having rules or making sure the rules were followed. I don't want to speak for them because that's not fair, but that's the perception that I have of the situation. And literally kind of just said too bad to the neighborhood. And that doesn't work. You can't do that to people. Plus, they themselves were telling us that people were being dropped off from Illinois at the facility. We know that the county would drop people off there also. And in fact, at times, I'm not going to deny that the police department probably dropped a few people off there too. The whole situation, though, comes down to is that there has to be a way of dealing with the individuals that are being there that have rules. And all these individuals can fit into different social service programs within the county. So there are places for them to go. It's a question of whether they want to go there and if they were willing to follow the rules. And that's where the issue comes. I mean, you know, the Shalom Center can take certain individuals, but you have to fit into a criteria of coming in, applying, and being willing to follow the rules of their facilities. There's the mental health facility that the kids use. There are any number of places that still have the ability to deal with this. And then there's the issue of how many are coming from someplace else that are just being sent here. And again, we had heard those stories, but basically the operator of the facility put it in the newspaper that was what was going on. So how many situations do we have where we cannot find places for this? The city's not unwilling to work with people to try to get something resolved, but you have to have two parties willing to resolve the issue, and that's not what's been happening. So from the city's perspective, the neighborhood has definitely spoken. My biggest fear is that because of how badly this has been handled in the sense of operations, it's going to be difficult to find locations that other neighborhoods are going to be willing to accept. So that becomes another issue. But at the first part of this has to happen is the county is going to have to make a determination of how they wish to handle this this group of individuals. How many of those individuals are truly, are we going to have difficulty actually placing, and how many are we going to be able to place into different organizations?
If First Step were to close its overnight shelter, where do you suppose these people are going to sleep?
I think there are a number of locations that they will fit into if they want to. And part of this is that, and this is where mental health and addiction become problematic, because you have to, they have to be willing to want to resolve some of the issues. And so that's what's going to have to, that's one of the things that's going to have to be done, and that's one of the things the county will have to look at.
Is there any official body that is going to be following up on this if the council denies that license?
I believe that the county is going to have to look at what they wish to do to deal with this issue.
I see. What are other communities doing? Do we see any models in other communities, Mayor Antaramian?
There are some models that you can look at, but again, they have to be done on a regional basis. So you need to have a, and again, I would, and in fairness, because the county, and I, when I say the county, I need people to understand it's not just, if it's a county responsibility, they should just do it. The county has the responsibility for health and social services. So it is their function under state laws to who's supposed to be doing what. You know, each of us have different functions.
Right.
They have budgets for it and things like that. So that people understand that. I think what the county needs to do is take a look on a regional basis and determine where a facility like this should be located. And a facility like this doesn't necessarily have to be in the city. It can be in Pleasant Prairie, it could be in Summers, it could be any number of locations. Doesn't mean it won't be in the city, but it's just that sometimes people become very narrowly focused that it has to be in this neighborhood. That's not the case. It can be in any number of places because these individuals have issues that need to be addressed and probably need to be more in a area where they have services and everything else that are going to be all day, not just you just come here at night or you just come here during the day type of system.
The idea of comprehensive services is a part of this.
That's exactly what has to happen. You almost need a system that enables someone to come in, have a safe place to stay, but also then have programming within the system so that that person stays in the system, finding out what is the problem. Is it alcohol and drugs? Is it mental health? What is it that this person needs? And then putting them into different slots or organization type of things that fit their need, and so that you get them help that they need to get to where they need to go. And that's not something that's going to be created overnight. It's not going to happen tomorrow. And it's something I think that needs to be looked at on a countywide basis. And a facility like that can be located any place. It doesn't have to be located in any one place.
As long as you can get the services to the population somehow.
That's exactly
correct.
Is that it? And you have basically in a lot of places, some models actually have all the services within the organization or within the facility. So there's a number of, like I said, there are a number of ways of dealing with it. Regrettably, the city is being put in the situation that certain people are just saying, well, the city should have just do this. Well, it doesn't solve the problem, and it definitely does not solve the problem in the neighborhood. And this neighborhood for many, many years has been concerned about what's going on in their neighborhood.
In other areas of the city, there is a lot of growth going on, and new subdivisions are popping up. Are any problems being created by those new subdivisions that you foresee or that we need to worry about mitigating in terms of sewer, flooding, traffic?
Actually, no. I think we're actually in very good shape in those areas. The city has done a good job in planning for what's going to happen. I will tell you the one issue, though, that I think is a problem and is an issue that I don't think the public understands, and they need to. And that is the situation where you have what's called dark stores. And what that is that what retailers are doing is shifting their cost from their stores to the homeowner because they've gone to court saying that, and I'll use an example. There's, I can use them as an example since it's already been filed, Myers. Store out on Highway 31. A number of the stores in Pleasant Prairie are in the same situation now, where they have filed that to reduce their value of their property so they would pay less taxes. And what they're doing is they're saying the value of their property should be compared to a dark store, empty store. And so in the case of something like Myers, where the valuation is about $20 million to their value, they want to drop that to like $9 million something in half. And if they succeed in doing that, the differential in the cost of what they pay in taxes immediately shifts to the homeowner.
And what could be the basis for that kind of reduction in assessment?
From my perspective, I think the courts have all of a sudden started looking at the assessing in a different way, a different light than they should be.
And this is something relatively new. So what's changed?
Well, it's not really new. It's something that was happening in other states, and they were winning. And then they brought it to Wisconsin, and they've been winning here. In some of the other states now, they've changed the law to stop it from happening. So right now we're talking to the legislature saying, you guys need to fix this because this is just a tax shift. You're shifting the cost of all these retailers to the homeowner, and that's just wrong.
Well, this could amount to, if this were replicated by all the big box stores around town, this could amount to, $50, $70 million of foregone taxes. Is that?
Oh, easy. You're looking at in valuation $100 million anyway, I'm guessing. So I probably shouldn't use numbers like that. But we'd be pretty hard-pressed to say it's not at least $100 million in value that will be lost if all these retailers keep going. Pleasant Prairie, there was a study done by a group of realtors. The realtors did a study. And I'm trying to remember, so I'm be careful here in holding me to this number. But I believe it showed like an $800 increase in the property taxes of an average home in Pleasant Prairie if all the retail won their fights on reducing their valuations to dark store concept.
That's significant.
$800. That's a lot of money to be adding to the property tax bill just from a tax shift. It has nothing to do with anything else. They're just shifting the cost.
How realistic is a legislative remedy in this state?
The legislature has started talking about it, but I think that if the only way that you're going to get this going is that people need to start calling their legislators and making sure that everyone understands. Now, I know that Representative Barca, and I know that I'm confident in Bob and Bob Wirch, Peter Barca, and Todd Amstead all want to see this fixed. But, you've got, and I think Van Weingart also is probably, in fairness, I don't want to put words, because I don't know what his real position is, though I tend to believe he's fine. And Samantha needs to be, these people need to be called. So if you're in Pleasant Prairie and Summers especially, they represent you.
And that's your tax bill.
That's your tax bill that's going to get hit. So I think you need to make sure you contact them. Like I said, I think Van Weingarten is in good shape, but I just say this just to, I don't want to speak for either he or Samantha because I don't know for sure where they're at. But I think in the sense of the senator, I think he's fine, but it's an area that I think needs to be addressed.
All right. In conclusion, I'd like to just get your final thoughts, Mayor Antaramian, for our listeners today. Where do you see your role in the city going in the next couple of years? What is it that John Antaramian is going to focus on?
Well, I think the areas that I'm going to focus on are actually three major ones. It's always the same three, to be honest with you, is the neighborhoods and focusing on revitalization of our older neighborhoods. I am a true believer that is one of the biggest things that we need to do in our community. Infrastructure and basically the economic development of the community, redirecting it in the area of research and development technology and manufacturing so that we actually get the jobs that we need in this community to keep our young people here.
Thank you very much. My guest today on Community Matters has been John Antaramian, Mayor of the City of Kenosha. And as always, I encourage our listeners to get informed and get involved. For Community Matters, Lenny Aquinta, good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.